Good God, we thank you for the day, for our life, for our being together, for the opportunity to study your word. Open our hearts to you, to the word, and to one another. Through Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen. Let's read that section of Ephesians once again out loud to get acquainted with it, and then go into our second session of it. Does someone want to read again verses 1 to 8, and somebody else read 9 to 16? Chapter 4 of Ephesians. Anybody feel up to it?
I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all lowliness and meekness, with patience, forbearing one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to the one hope that belongs to your call. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of us all, who is above all and through all and in all. But grace was given to each of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore it is said, when he ascended on high, he led a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men.
Okay, someone else?
In saying he ascended, what does it mean that he had also descended into the lower parts of the earth? He who descended is he who also ascended far above all the heavens, and that he might fill all things. And his gifts were that some should be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, to equip the saints for the work of the ministry, for building up the body of Christ until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the cunning of men, by their craftiness in deceitful wiles. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and knit together by every joint with which it is supplied, when every part is working properly, makes bodily growth and upbuilds itself in love.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Fine, thank you. For those of you who were here yesterday, we focused largely about the unity of the church, not only in terms of congregations or denominations, but the unity that lies beyond that, or is the source of all of that. And my suggestion was, out of the many things that are in this section of Scripture, we would spend today talking about what these gifts are that Jesus Christ, who both descended and ascended, left for us. And some of these are, in verse 11 it says, these were his gifts, some to be apostles, and this is my translation here, some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, to equip God's people for work in his service, to the building up of the body of Christ, so that we'll finally attain to the unity inherent in our faith and our knowledge of the Son of God, to mature humanity measured by nothing less than the full stature of Christ. So, talking about the gifts that have been given us for leaders, in the church, long apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, whoever, these, whatever names we might give to them. When you think about what it says here, is that the purpose of giving these gifts was to equip God's people for work in God's service. I don't know what all of our expectations would be. There are many, many, I suppose, that we have of our leaders. For some, that they ought to be able to lead worship services or preach. Others, perhaps, that they would teach. Certainly some that would be, expectations are that some of our leaders would be around to help us in time of trouble. And others, our expectations would be that they get things organized and keep things going. And I suppose surely for some would be that they bring the money in and so the congregation could go ahead. If we were to take Paul seriously here, it would be that whatever all of those things are that are expectations, the end result ought to be equipping the people of God, in other words, all of the members of the congregation, for their service, wherever that would be. And of course, I would hope that that service would not be limited to the local congregation. In other words, get people to just come and do things at the local congregation. We had a pastor in a congregation I belonged to. I don't know how long he was there, 7 or 8 years. I don't think he ever used one illustration of service that was outside of the congregation. Clear impression would be that if you wanted to serve God, you had to somehow do something down at the church. And certainly that's important, but that's, you know, just terribly limiting, because our good friend Martin Luther, with all of the things that he did that weren't that great and all of the things that he did that were very great, one of the things he had was an understanding of the ministry of the laity, that their work in the family, in the schools, in jobs, in medicine, in politics, in whatever they would do, that was a calling from God, and that what the church was about wasn't to try and get those people back to this building, but rather to equip them at this building so they could get back out where they belonged. I remember a pastor in Janesville, Wisconsin, who had an average kind of congregation, and one of his Sunday school teachers was elected to the school board in town. And he thought that they would work hard on finding another public Sunday school teacher, because her role at that school board was so unique and she could be so influential that they would pick up the responsibility of keeping the Sunday school going, because she had this unique opportunity to be a member of a school board in the community and influence as a Christian what was going on in the schools. And I thought he had a pretty good understanding of what St. Paul was saying here, and what I think Martin Luther was all about. In the earlier class, a young woman was here and said, "Well, I grew up in the Roman Catholic Church, and the only way we were taught that we could serve is to go to become a nun or a priest. Then we were really serving God." And as she said, "It always seemed to me the rest of us were sort of not very useful because we didn't have, quote, a ministry." So that's the kind of thing that I would suggest on the basis of this text. And if you want to talk more about the text, we can do that too, that we might talk about. Sure.
I don't quite understand verse 7. "But grace was given to each of us according to the measure of Christ's gift." I mean, I don't think we all have the same grace. I don't understand that. Verse 7.
Right. In this one, this translation, "But each of us has been given his gift in due portion of Christ's bounty." So the word grace, again, often in the Greek words that are used there are used in various ways. I didn't check it out. But the gift that is given, it isn't, we use the word grace, largely for the grace of God that comes to us in Jesus Christ because of his suffering and death. But the word is used otherwise, too. It isn't used only to talk about that grace. From this translation, I would just guess that that use of the word grace there was not the best, but that it was really the gift that was given, which is a gift, you know, beyond the grace of God that calls us to be his own right away, but we have gifts in addition to that.
Not a whole thing.
Oh no, those would be, that's the emphasis in, in this chapter and in 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12 is how different all the gifts are. The grace of God the same, but the gifts very, very different. And what he's saying later on in that text, all of these workers for the church, that their goal is to stir up those gifts so that they are used broadly. Hunkered in for ourselves or whatever else it may be.
Luther did say something about the woman mopping the floor.
Absolutely.
Was serving God.
No question. Luther understood that well. And we would say she's mopping the floor, and well, what we give the impression of, I think, and you may not agree with me, that she's good, that's serving God, mopping the floor, but she also ought to be on a committee at church. You had your hand up.
No, I'm going to tell you a little story about I've always been a Sunday school teacher ever since I've been 13 years old, since I was confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought I was, about 6-7 years ago, I think it's been already. I decided, maybe they'd better have some younger teachers, so I was thinking about giving them up teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so I happened to go to an evening service with my boss where I used to work, and this Palau, I don't know if his name is Gonzalez Palau. I don't know if you've ever heard of him before.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it Luis Palau?
Mm-hmm. He was a speaker there at their church that
mm-hmm.
night. And he had been an alcoholic or a drug addict or living in New York, and then he became a Christian, and now he speaks all over the world. And he was there at their church that night, and when I came in, I had a kind of pain in my hip, like a hard walk that night for some reason. And I was debating this question, whether to keep on teaching or not. And I had never seen him, and he had never seen me. But they did have a healing service that night, and then all of a sudden he pointed right square at me, and he said, "There's a woman sitting over there who has a pain in her hip," and he said, "That's going to disappear." And he said, "She's also debating the question whether or not she's going to teach Sunday school." And he said, "You keep right on teaching. The Lord needs you." So consequently, I'm still teaching Sunday school. I even brought my material with me because I had to be absent now for Raleigh Day.
I'd be more impressed with Louis if I knew that he also said, "The Lord needs people in politics. The Lord needs people in the medical profession."
Yeah, right. Sure, yeah.
It's the emphasis in the other direction. Let me tell you a story of something I experienced. It's been a while back, but it was true then. I don't know whether it's true now. We studied 28 or 29 congregations in the Chicago area. Most of them Lutheran, not all the one church body, and some of them were Methodist and Presbyterian and the rest. We were trying to find out which of those congregations took the lay people seriously in their congregation by their own definition, not by bringing a definition and saying, "This is what you ought to be doing if you take the laity seriously." So it lasted about 2.5 years to study it. We spent lots of time in each of the congregations talking to the lay people and talking to the clergy as well. And it was a mix. Those congregations were large and small, in the city and outside of the city, suburbs. I don't think there were any rural congregations. And there were, and the pastors had been there a long time or a short time. The pastors were old and young, so it was sort of a mix. It wasn't a random sample or anything like that. And what they found out, how they were describing the ministry of the lady, and I'll write this up here, and then after we found out how they were describing, we asked them, "Well, is this what you're doing or not?" And then we'll tell you what the answer is. So they saw the ministry of the people of God in these terms. What is that ministry? The first thing that was pretty obvious they saw was doing things at church. And that would sort of include going to church, singing choir, teaching Sunday school, whatever it may be, being on the trustees or whatever it may be. Another thing that they saw was the ministry of the people of God was getting others to do things at church. In other words, this would be outreach, you know, recruitment, whatever it be. It might be getting members of the church to be more involved. It might be bringing other people into the church and so on, and things of that kind. The third thing that they included in it was doing your best in your work. In other words, if you were a parent, you'd be the best parent you could be because of Jesus Christ. If you were a plumber, you'd be the best plumber you could be because of Jesus Christ. If you were in politics, you were a teacher, you were a nurse, whatever it would be, whatever you did, that would be your calling to be, do that the very best you could because of Jesus Christ. The fourth was, I wrote too big over here, was helping others because of Jesus Christ, especially others in need. Whoever these people might be relatives, might be people in a nursing home, might be people in the poverty-stricken areas, might be people overseas, whatever it may be, that was part of the ministry of the people of God. So these were these four. And then the last one was sharing with others what any of these things over here had to do with Jesus Christ. That all of these could be done without ever talking about Christ, and probably maybe would be done that way without it. One part of their ministry they saw was, of the ministry of the people of God, was telling other people how any of this was connected with Jesus Christ. So that was the range of definitions they did. They didn't sit down and say, well, we think it is this, but they would just describe things that were going on. And then we would come back and say, well, we heard last time, we heard you saying this and that. Is that so? And they'd say, well, maybe not. Maybe yes or yet. And then they say, or yes, that's right. So after a long period of time, just evolving, this is the kind of things that they were talking about. And we went back to them and they said, yeah, that's pretty much what we understand. Well, two things have to be said in addition to that. When we asked them, is this really what you understand and work at in your congregation? Now you said this, but is that really what you consciously understand and work at? They said no. All 28 said no. But the other thing that has to be said is that in the whole of this study, over that period, 2.5 years, the people who thought that this was the ministry of the people of God was about 95% of the people. And only 5% of the people thought this was. It was all there, but almost all of the people thought this was what the ministry of the people of God was. Not this, that this could happen, but that was not the ministry of the people of God. Not this, that was somebody else's job. And certainly not this, that was somebody else's job as well. And that was, of course, a very disturbing thing. Our commission that was studying this over a period of 2.5 years then decided we would just break our report and go out of business. We were afraid if we stayed in business talking about it, they would say, well, it's being taken care of. Somebody's doing something about it. And we were convinced that that would not be true. So we just went out of business.
Are you familiar with that Hampton's books and paper. That looks almost like that. That's, and we use it in our church. We go, that looks like, well, we continue beyond that.
Sure. I've seen it some time ago. I haven't looked at it recently, but I'm aware.
We got the public relations. We have, you know, ADs and all those people meeting. So it sounds like we've done.
My concern is that the church tends to look in on itself, that what happens connected with the congregation is the ministry of the people of God, rather than the stuff that people are doing wherever they are. What they do in their home that has nothing to do with church work. What they do at the office, which has nothing to do with church work in terms of, you know, being sponsored by the church. Or what they do in their societal life, what they do for their recreation, what they do with anything else, that what we have, pastors, teachers, what all those for, is to help us make those connections with God out there. And I think that we don't often get that feeling from the people. We get so caught up, this is my judgment, may have had different experience. We get so caught up in keeping the church going in its own process that we get caught up in saying, now that's the most important thing, or like the 95% did, that they only that part of it was the most important. I think all of them are important, personally. I like all of those. I wouldn't want any of those not to be up there. But I think it's really skewed in a bad direction to have only is stuff happening at the church place. And I think a lot of the reasons that some people, I don't mean only young, old and young, turn away from the church is that they feel that kind of ingrownness, and that the place doesn't seem to be alive in sense of what's going on in the world today around them. And again, that the preaching, the teaching, the service, or whatever it may be, doesn't seem to equip you for out there, but more to equip you for what we do over here. Now, unless we're doing something at the church to equip them, you know, it's not going to happen. So those first two are very important. But their goal, too, ought to be to push people out into the life that they live out there. I know of one congregation. When they had their annual meetings or whatever it is, they didn't have any reports from the boards and the committees of the church. They had reports from the people who were working in different places out there. Teachers reported what was going on in the school districts. Doctors reported on what was happening in medical ethics. People who were in local politics, you know, a member of the county commission or something like that, said the issues that were going on here. And so the whole of the world outside of the congregation was being reported on, obviously limitedly, from the point of view of just a few people. But the congregation then was being led to say, all of that is part of our care and concern. We don't have to organize and go and take over the Board of Commissioners, but we ought to be concerned with what they're concerned about. They may be concerned about the right things. We may think those are not the right things. Or we might think there are some other things that we as Christians can bring to them. I've told the story a number of times here at Holden. His name escapes me this morning. The pastor, he's been here at Holden. He lives in Texas now. He used to live in Toledo, Ohio. And he was pastor of the congregation. And once a year, there's a large congregation downtown Toledo. He would tell all the people connected with the medical profession, nurses and doctors and technicians and hospital administrators, whatever, who are members of his congregation, I want you to come to church on the second Sunday in March or whatever it was. I don't care if you don't come at all the rest of the year. I want you to be here that Sunday, and I want the whole day. I want you to be there from 9 till 5, and the rest of it I don't care. Well, as it turned out, what he did is that the adult class that Sunday dealt with the medical profession and its calling to be healers of people. The sermon related to that. They had a luncheon right afterwards and had a speaker at the luncheon. And then they had a special workshop in the afternoon dealing with the various things that went that whole day in which the congregation, not everybody from the medical profession could come, but they'd have 60, 80 people connected with that who would come and get that day. And because they were paid attention to on that day, they were much more inclined to come other days in which their particular life was not being so much focused on. I thought that was really a sharp idea. There's another story I was going to tell. Good.
We had an interesting outreach type of thing, I think, serving a small congregation in Chicago on the southwest side near the old Midway Airport. And this fellow was a barber, and on Sunday mornings he had no children. And he would start out in his car with a pocket full of clean, new little combs. And he picked up, in fact, some Sundays he had to make 2 and 3 trips picking up little kids around the neighborhood and bringing them into Sunday school. And we learned that a cup of milk and a cracker was a good snack because they hadn't seen breakfast. But they invited each other, you know. Mm-hmm. Joe's going to come around, and some interesting family contacts. Mm-hmm. were made through that, and I thought that was an interesting outreach. Mm-hmm. It was during the First World War II, and lots of little kids were living on the streets, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that was a different one that we didn't find again in any congregation. Of course, it wasn't Chicago either.
Mm-hmm. Was your study required to be called around one
Oh, as I said, we met with laity as well with clergy. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Paid more attention to what the clergy did. The clergy lied most of the time. They wouldn't have called it that. They would have called, exaggerating or whatever else we. They all pretended that they knew the laity. They didn't. When you got past that, when they found out that I wasn't connected to a bishop or a president, that I wasn't snooping on. Then you found out that they didn't know their God. They just pretended.
What was their
reaction? So the laity was, we paid more attention to what the laity said.
What was their reaction to the report and what you found out?
They didn't like it.
The laity
too. Well, yes. Well, I think I said that yesterday. That this was, I was referring to this study. What we found is that the laity, the clergy didn't really know their laity, and the laity knew that and liked it, because if they did know, then something might have to change.
There, I assume there were exceptions.
Oh, sure, of course. Not many. There are very few congregations that take the laity seriously here. This is what the laity is about in most Lutheran churches. This is what they hear from the pulpit. This is what they hear in Bible class. That if they're enrolled in Bethel by a study, they're much more important to the congregation than if they can't make it a couple of Sundays because they're doing something else over here. But would you say, he's been enrolled in Bethel? Might be good. Might be an escape. Might be a denial of the call of God. We ought to be able to say that. Sure. I don't have any doubt about the study myself. And I haven't seen a lot that changes in my role.
Well, aren't we to assume that the gospel somehow, if the preaching should be such that it would influence people to do the rubbish you think. It doesn't always, for sure, but it isn't, in a sense, that's, and then if you have the leadership of pastors who are also doing those other things, very involved in community, that's more important than gimmicks, it seems.
No, I agree with that.
But then to find those kind of men
is very difficult.
And women and men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think I used to go to conventions. I used to go 5-6 conventions a year of districts and synods in the church. And I was always amazed at how docile the lay people were. They were being insulted, they right and left. They were being treated like little kids. All of the emphasis was on the clergy. If there were any anniversaries, it wasn't any lay anniversaries, it was always clergy. If there were any remembrance of people who died, it was always clergy who would die. And they were being treated, this is my friend who's been asked to speak here. We were at seminary together and all that stuff. Who cares? I don't care whether you went to seminary with some guy. I want to know what's going to happen with these people for the equipping of God's people for work in his service. And I would sit with some of the lay people and say, you like this stuff? Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty bad. And I think the lay people ought to rise up and demand. I think I said yesterday, I think we get the kind of clergy that we deserve. Because we aren't making demands. We're making demands that they help us over here. They're trained largely to do this, still today. There's more of this than ever before in our seminaries. There's no question about that. I don't argue with that a moment. But this is still, and I think as I said yesterday, what we discovered that most of the clergy, this was some time ago now, were still saying, well, my people wouldn't accept this. If I start talking about this kind of stuff, then they're going to stop giving, they're going to stop coming, they're going to stop whatever. And I think that's absolutely untrue. And I think it's very dumb. And even if it is true, what are you called to do? But if they get the hint, well, first, when we were going through all the stuff, and some congregations still are, about accepting black people. There's still some congregations where it's very, very uncomfortable for black people to come. Just because of the mood of the place and all that. The pastors knew that they should be open to all that stuff. But my people aren't ready for it yet. They were saying it again and again and again. And they would be amazed when somebody would come in and help them and find out the people were far more ready than they ever dreamt. And again, that's what I'm saying. Unless the lay people jump up and down and say some things and say, no, you're not reading us right. We want more than you're giving us. And I'm not, I think then some more things could happen. I'm not trying to be a prophet of doom. I'm also trying to say we dare not run away from what at least I think is part of the reality. And it would be lovely, as you say, when the gospel is preached, people would automatically do things. But how about you? You've heard God's gospel call that says we are supposed to say good things about people and not. Has that changed your gossiping? Sure. Somebody said that last night. We had a matins here last year, in which somebody said, how about just today we talk about anybody else only as if that person was present with us? And the people in the community said they had a tough time talking. Sure. So, you'd want, and I believe in the power of the gospel, but I think that, that's set at odds with so much of ourselves. I think original sin is deception and self-deception. And we deceive ourselves all the time. That's why we need one another. That's why we gather in congregations. That's why this part of it over here is so important. We get together to be straightened out again and then get out there. And so that translation into where the gospel fits for us. We work pretty hard, I think. I'll talk about me. I work pretty hard in keeping that from getting close to where I know in my heart of hearts I need it. I can be led to it. My friends do most of that for me. I have a friend that will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of our friendship. He lets me know quickly where it has to be, cuts through. Friend isn't only the person who I turn to him when I need support and comfort, for sure. But I also turn to him when I need to be straightened out, because he'll help me. Yeah.
You know, like in our case, in our church, if we want to do something that you've got in the Bible, our pastor, well, but our congregation's not ready for it.
Sure.
So we're put down and can't go ahead with it. Is that common in all the congregations?
I think it is. I don't know how the rest of you people feel.
Well, isn't it much, it's much safer, it's safer and more controlled to have people in those, in that, those two.
Over here?
Yeah, and the 95% than the 5%.
But if the laity is the one that should rise up and say, do something about that, and he says, well, the pastor says, we're not ready for that, then as laity, you know, where should he go? He should go to the top, to the SEM, and say, you're not training these people right, or what? What?
Okay. So he's just to leave and go to a different church, that's all he can do.
What do you think?
We definitely know that are standing up.
Yeah. We're starting to gain souls.
Yeah, we're gaining. And the rest of us are praying, so we're true too, right? We're gaining some. I kind of see it the other way around, and especially in our organization, the one, we're a member of several women, and they're the ones, the minute people retire, then they think, oh, let the younger ones do it, and then they don't come and support, and they don't help anymore. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's six of one and half a dozen of the other, because I don't think even the organizations in the church are being supported by the church people where they should be.
But it all depends on what those organizations are doing. If it's over here, then maybe they shouldn't. You know, maybe they should be out here.
Yeah,
and not over here.
I'm trying to get, like even our young people who, all for the past 2 years, in fact, since they've had the leadership they've had, they've done absolutely nothing except have money projects so that they can have a good time. They go to Valley Fair and hikes that are on overnight things, you know, things like that. And I said, why don't you give them a service project where they can be doing something?
Sure.
I said, they don't know what they're missing. I mean, and I said, I think they would be a lot stronger, and they'll come together, because young people love to do things for others. I mean, if you lead them that way. Because I've been a campfire guardian, and you can give them a service project, and we do that.
But if a congregation gives this kind of impression and this kind of a personality, it's going to be very hard for them to get them over here, mm-hmm. because what they'll respond to what they see and know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, is there any involvement? You know, like I can remember when I grew up that the pastor, you know, whatever the pastor said was right. Mm-hmm. I never thought it was, but then that's it seems to me that that people are less apt to think that now, although I fear that as we have done in the political scene, mm-hmm. people want a father figure, and a pastor in those days certainly was the father figure, mm-hmm. I believe. And so now, and maybe in the 60s, there was this feeling that you, mm-hmm. you know, you didn't, if your pastor didn't like this, depending on your church body, that you could speak out and all of this. Maybe there's less of that now, and maybe pastors have become fearful. But I've heard of that too, that they just, you know, like, I attended a church where some people walked out when the pastor mentioned the nuclear problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he continued, however, thank God. But
mm-hmm.
I guess a lot of them are very fearful.
Right, and it's, here's where, again, the closeness and support of people are needed. Not everybody in a congregation is going to be at the same place. Some people probably should be only over here. You know, that's where they are, because faith is received, you know, and worked out. We all get Jesus Christ, but what we're able to handle of it is a different level. doesn't have to be the whole congregation goes gung-ho, but it does mean that those who are committed to being and doing these things in here ought to be supportive of one another. And I think some of our pastors have to be corrected, but as you're saying, I think some of our pastors have to be supportive. They're terribly human, as you know, and need somebody who said, "No, Pastor, you're right when you do that. I really believe so, and you know, we'll stand with you." I think that's an important part. Yes?
Can you tell a story?
Sure.
This is just striking me. It just fits in very well with this, although I've never connected it. I had fun for a while working with the youth group. And the kids were very, very a close-knit group and enjoyed being together. It was a strong group, just that they wanted to be together all the time. It wasn't a chore to get these kids together. And they got to talking for a while about community and the people that they spend time with and how important all of their lives with, how important the people are that they spend their lives with, that maybe being a Christian isn't just Sunday morning at the church. And the more they talk, the more they realize that people show up at church on Sunday in their nice clothes and say, "Hi, how are you? I'm fine. Have a nice week. See you next week." And they got, I mean, really got into it. I mean, I did very little at all in any of this discussion. They decided that the people needed to do more than say, "Hi, how are you?" on Sunday morning. And once in a while, we got to do church service on Sundays. And so we asked everybody to show up at church in the clothes that they wear during the week, whether that's their work or their play or whatever is important to them. And the church service we had was people getting up, we opened with a hymn and closed with a hymn, and in between, all we did was listen to people tell us what the fun parts of their work or their lives were and what the frustrations were. 2 hours people sat there and did that. And it was really fun, and some good things came out of that, you know, within the congregation. But I just was, you know, at the time it was more the aspect of community and that the teenagers had managed to pull something off like this and to really learn about other people. But it seems that it really struck people, and that it seemed to support that their lives during the week are so important to the people of faith and the people that they are with, that they wanted to sit there for 2 hours and share with each other what their lives were. And I had not thought of that aspect of it up to this point, other than just, you know, community part of it.
There was an ALC congregation that I had my office in Chicago area, and I found out through, I forget who it was in the congregation, that 52 of their members were public school teachers. And what a marvelous opportunity for bringing those people together, you know, not all the time, but sometimes. Superintendent Bob Rubino, still superintendent of that high school district, he's a member of that congregation. That they could get together and talk about what it means to be Christian. And I don't mean then, I'm not talking about bringing Christian teachings into the classroom and, you know, setting up these things, but to be Christian in the way you did it all. Mm-hmm. The way you cared about students, the way you cared about the principals even, you know, the way you cared about the superintendent of the school board, that your faith was being lived out in this way and how you could support one another for that. Seems to me that would have been a real neat thing to do with that many. So say you got 20 of them even to come out. That would be pretty great. Some others? Yeah.
I was going to say, in the new ELCA church, the representation at the Senate now are going to be quite in favor of the laity. Our church is very small, and we have 2-1, the pastor and 2 laity. And then the larger church, like Lodi, is 2 pastors and 3 or 4 laity. So, laypersons. So it may change somewhat at the conventions. I won't say it will, but...
Mm-hmm. It would be
not all the leaders are going to be pastors either.
Correct. It would be good. It would be helpful if that would be the case. They do have a commission on the ministry of the laity now in the new church structure too. But again, I'm always worried that if that's put over to the side, and that's where you take care of that, when it should be part of the Department of Education, it should be the part of the of the women's department, it should be part of, you know, all of us, it should be part of global missions, whatever it may be. I visited Hong Kong, and we were pouring money into Hong Kong with teachers and congregations and preachers. And if you found out, there were always some 4,000 to 8,000 American Christian lay people in Hong Kong any given day. They should be doing the work, it seems to me, a great deal of it at least, you know, that their presence should be part of the mission to the city of Hong Kong. And it was probably a lot more even than that figure. But we were pouring all of our expectations into just these few people when the place was loaded with Christians of one kind or another.
How large is the seminary over there?
In Hong Kong? Yeah. Oh boy, I don't know. I don't remember. It's, you know, there's quite, at that time, it seemed to me there was like 30. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how many now. Somebody else? Yes?
We belong to a church that prides itself in hospitality.
In hospitality?
In hospitality. Mm-hmm. And every time we have something, we feed people. Our own congregation, we feed our own people. I just missed last Sunday was a rally Sunday, and I made posters for these things. And pastor said, well, be sure and put down dinner will be served. And I said, dinner? I said, you mean a brunch? He says, no, a dinner. Mm. This Sunday is our evangelism thrust, and there will be a banquet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure now October we're going to have a thrust for hunger in the world, and I'm sure they're going to serve a banquet. And how, and I said, I just can't see that we're always putting all this effort because all the tables are decorated and all these favors, you know, they make a big thing of it. Our women like to do that. And I said, how come we have to spend all this time on that? Oh, yes, Easter breakfast is always designated as a gourmet breakfast. And but our pastor thinks that's being hospitable, it attracts people. But it's the same faces. How do we?
And what do you think?
I said it doesn't seem right. He said, well, Joyce, you go to Holden, you know how much they emphasize hospitality.
Yeah, with our gourmet food.
But how do you need to find hospitality?
I mean, how do we move people from, you know, the 95% into the, you know, more of the 5%? Because I remember experience at my church, and I'm very active in the church, and I'm always kind of frustrated and rumbling around and screaming and hollering, unlike many people in my church. And I remember there was two situations, this was probably in the last 6 months, and I knew that I was going to use this word, and I did. I used the word trite for two specific situations, and I thought that would kind of rally people behind my cause. And instead, the response I got was, "We'll pray for you." I mean, I was real frustrated and real upset, so I just used trite, and I just went into a big dialogue, and it fell flat.
Well, you've got a bunch of experts here.
Yeah.
Assuming these people are mostly laity here, I'm not a layperson. You've got to come up with ideas. You won't get them from anybody else.
I've gotten courage in this group. I'm going back and tell them again.
Go ahead.
Well, if you want to have a meal that emphasizes our concern for hunger, you do not eat a lot.
I know.
They can't see that.
But they're good Scandinavian cooks, and everybody wants to show off their best.
But you keep coming up against it. Well, the Senate wouldn't like that. You're just beating your head against the pastor's wall.
Yeah, again, that is so so un-Lutheran. That's what Luther started out about, is when the people somewhere else were telling him to do things that weren't as much of the gospel of what he wanted to do. And he said, synods and councils and all that, they make mistakes. And again, I think if we want to be Lutheran, we have to raise questions about what's going on. And, you know, and learn. We may be wrong. Luther was wrong on enough stuff. He was right on some stuff. And none of us are going to be right on everything, but we certainly can assume that other people are not going to be right on everything, too. So that raising of questions, I think, is terribly important.
You have to keep at half the people. You can't just like her, you know, you have to speak out, but mm-hmm. you don't, it's going to take a long time. In our church, we're rather small, like I said, but for the past 10 years, we've been raising quite a bit of money. We built Sunday school rooms, fine. Now we're building new social hall. They want new pews, they want new rugs. And we give a lot for benevolences, but we don't give much in the way, say, to Holden or to other causes like that. And I think that's a mistake. I think we're putting too much emphasis on the local level, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty hard to come up. We bought a new organ here lately, and things like that. And like I say, we're a little over 100 people, but they're very good givers.
So much of that stuff then revolves around this side over here, doesn't it? I tell the story where we, in the parish I belong to, they had so many things, and had just rebuilt the church and all that kind of stuff. And then the opportunity came to help the poor in East Chicago Heights, which at that time had no sewer system yet, a city of about 20,000. The income rate and the education rate was the lowest in the state of Illinois, and there were specific needs that were there, and they had the opportunity of choosing between a new parking lot and helping the people over there. You know what they chose. Put the parking lot in. They had a perfectly good gravel parking lot, but they had to have it covered with some kind of stuff. But the choice was clear to the people. So, and again, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, if we're talking here about the leadership, we would want the leadership to be different, but so many of us are turned in on ourselves and selfish, too. And when we get together in a group, we don't suddenly not become that. And so we do it corporately often as well. And that's working away on ourselves to avoid that. And then working away on ourselves to let ourselves be known, as you're saying, keep saying it. And then working away constantly on the long job of changing terribly well-established points of view, and I think that's why we have to get together at places like Holden, is to reassure ourselves that it's worthwhile. My story that I tell about that is during that time I met with a number of lay people individually too, and one fellow was a member of a congregation that I knew, Henry. I think it's the first thing that I thought of it before. Was high in the hierarchy of Illinois Central Industries, which is a major corporation on the New York Stock Exchange. He had been their lobbyist in D.C. for about 4 or 5 years. It would take Ted Kennedy and all these people to the concerts and all this stuff he did. Whatever lobbyists have to do. So he was in that realm. And I had lunch with him. He took me to his club, and of course we had a gourmet lunch. But in the process, he was telling me, as a committed Christian, Henry Davenport, what his company was doing to improve the conditions under which many of the people in their subsidiaries were working under. And there were some very serious things being done. He was obviously very excited about it. He was a key in that at that time. He was slated to become president. He didn't make it. He died in a heart attack on vacation. But he was telling them about this, and he was really excited about it. And I picked up the enthusiasm because it sounded like all good things to me. And I said to Henry, Henry, what does that have to do with God? And I wish I'd had a tape recorder to hear it. He had such an understanding of how his faith in God through Jesus Christ would be, that he saw this all connected. It was just marvelous. And I was probably sitting there open-mouthed. I just was great. And I said, well, Henry, what's that got to do with your local congregation? He said, oh, well, nothing, of course. He didn't see any touch between that congregation and God and his work. Now, maybe that's all right, you know, but we sure spent an awful lot of time around the congregation and working and building it if it doesn't really have any connection. So I really sort of felt bad about that. And he was a faithful member of the church, never missed going to church, served on the committees and all of that stuff. He wasn't anti-local congregation. But he didn't see any connection between that and what he did out there. Now, maybe that's the way it's going to be later on. I don't know. Maybe the congregation just won't have that role. I don't think so. And I guess what I'm saying, if we put all that time into having the congregation, it ought to have some results in the lives of the people rather than just being a stopgap or whatever else it may be. Now, it may have had more connection than Henry. I think it did, than Henry ever saw. But he didn't perceive it. And I thought that it would have been better. It would have been greater if he did perceive it. No, maybe so.